My sobriety date is July 8th of 2005, so I just celebrated 8 years. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. I'm extremely grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, which has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams, as well as this home group, which has taught me so many things about myself, how to behave in society. It was good to see my buddy Caleb tonight. I haven't seen him in a while, and I met him my first day of being sober, and I was probably skittish as a cat in a room full of rocking chairs. And he had 3 days, which was a lot at the time. So, so it brought a lot of stuff back, and a couple other guys that are here from a treatment facility that I went to as well. So, 8 years, it sounds like a longer time, but it hasn't felt that way, And just by doing these simple things, that you guys have suggested to me, my life has become something I would have never imagined. And I'm not going to stand up here too long. The guy I picked to speak for me tonight, who I asked, he's a guy who was one of the first guys to start this group. I didn't necessarily pick him because of his tenure, but I picked him because every time I see him, he's talking to the new guy. It's real easy in here, and definitely myself not excluded from that too. Just catch up with your friends, see how things are going, gripe a little bit about what's going on in your life. But, I always see him working with the new guy. And, that's what you have to do to stay sober the length of time that he has. So without any further ado, and I don't even see where he is, but I'll give you Todd. All right.
Thanks, man. I'm Todd. I'm an alcoholic. And congratulations. I was surprised he asked me to speak. And I've known Josh for a while. I was actually up in D.C. when Josh got sober. And but I knew about him. And I think we met like when I'd come down here. And he might have come up to D.C. for a couple men's advances. And he does AA. People stay sober from doing AA who are alcoholics. And I feel like I could count on Josh to, if I needed help, no question, absolutely. And congratulations to Nikki too, and thanks Megan for speaking. I agree with Megan. Every now and then you meet someone just outside AA and needs help, and whenever that's a girl and I end up bringing them to the home group, they know Nikki, no doubt. They every time, they're like, I'm like, hey, so did you meet anyone? Yeah, this nice girl, Nikki, she talked my ear off and this and that, and she's so nice. And, they have a ride to the women's meeting tomorrow, and they're hooked up. And they, every time they talk to Nikki, no doubt. And that's worth a lot, I think. And I can relate a lot to Megan. And I don't know, I guess I'll just get into it. First, I'm really glad to be here. I couldn't be here last week. I was sick. I've been sick for about a week, and I'm still kind of not contagious anymore, which is good. But I'm like recovering, and my eyes are all watery and weird, and so I can't really see. And so I don't know. I tend to look around anyway when I speak, so I don't know if it'll make a difference. But I got sober in up in D.C. I was 19 when I got sober. I guess I'll start, with before that. I was born in Michigan. I didn't really like being a kid. I didn't have any reason not to like it. A fine family. My parents are great people. I got a big brother. He's a great role model. They're just not alcoholics, so they're not. I couldn't be like him if I wanted to, But I just didn't. I was bored as a kid. I couldn't wait to grow up because everything's too high up, or just wasn't coordinated, and people talk to you like you're dumb, and it just kind of wasn't interested in anything until I did drugs. It's the first thing I was like, oh, I could be good at this, and I was when I was when I was 15, I was an awkward kid. I knew that. Like I knew, I would meet people, and my mom works in the fashion industry, and she'd always dress me really well, and so I didn't look weird, you know what I mean? And I would go to a new summer camp or school or whatever, and meet kids, and they would generally walk up to me like, "Hey, who are you?" You know, like people were nice to me. I didn't look funny, but I knew it was a matter of time. I would say something, and they would walk away. You know what I mean? Every time, and I could count on it that they, I would just say something off or awkward or strange, and I would, "Oh, why did I say that?" And then they would just, I'd never see them again. And and that was my experience. And so I got to high school, and you know, I had all that weird stuff going on, and then I just wasn't doing good in school. So my parents took me to doctors, and they gave me some drugs, and I loved them, man. I took the whole bottle the first day, and, it was great. And I was on, they gave me speed because they, thought I needed some, a lot of kids need speed, I guess. And so I took, within a week I was doing like, 200-300 milligrams of Ritalin a day, and just loving it. I was so interested in life suddenly, and I was like, I'd be in class, and the bell would ring, and the teacher would still be lecturing, and I'd be like, "Finish your story," you know what I mean, just because I needed to know the rest of what was going on, that's a speed's addictive, it doesn't make me an alcoholic that I did that, but it's a little weird that I would get that into it real quick, right? And then a couple years later, if you do that much of uppers, I wasn't sleeping, I wasn't eating, so I just kind of burned out and went crazy. And so then I was, 16, 17, and just real not happy. I was hooked on this stuff physically, couldn't get off it, but not happy. And writing depressing poetry and leaving it around the house, and then people would read it, and I'd be like, "Quit reading my stuff," but like, "But what'd you think?" And like that, I was just, it's a weird kid, and I still hadn't drank yet. I didn't know what alcohol was going to do for me. I mean, if I could go back in time, I would be like, "Kid, just drink some rum, and you'll be okay," I didn't know yet, so, but I was pretty miserable, and, not enjoying life. And by the grace of God, I sat at a different lunch table with some punk rocker kids, and they invited me out that Friday, and they, they showed me how to smoke weed. And I was like, "Thank God," it just saved my life. Cause I was, if you would have asked me at the time, I was like, "Yeah, I'll probably just choke on one of these pills one of these days. And that's it." Cause I didn't see any point in living. And, it gave me something to live for. It gave me an appetite and helped me sleep. And it was amazing. And, so, did that for a while. Still didn't drink yet. Still didn't know about it yet. You know what I mean? My parents drink heavy. They're not alcoholics. My brother drinks heavy. He's not an alcoholic. But I just wasn't interested. And I tried it. I just thought it tasted funny. And, I was so good at doing the other stuff, And eventually, my stomach grew up a little bit to where I could drink, and it didn't make me feel sick. And then I quickly drank out of, I just could not control the way I drank at all. And I like rum a lot. And I had a flask. And I don't know how like classy flask owners operate with a flask, but I would just fill a flask full of rum and drink that all day, and then get to wherever there was more and drink that. And I passed out quick every time. And I puked a lot. Almost every time I drank, I puked. And I would often embarrass myself, like get way too honest with some girl, and like, "I've always loved you," and the next morning, like, "Oh, why did I say all that stuff?" It's weird. And I couldn't stop, there's no way I was gonna stop. And I was in college. After high school, I got into college in New Orleans, and I was down in going to Tulane in New Orleans. And I wasn't going to class. I was just getting wasted all the time. And someone like knew someone who was making LSD, and it was really cheap. And the reason I bring that up is because it was the most economic thing, you know what I mean? I for $5, you know, you could give someone $5 and they had like a whole bunch of liquid LSD and they would just squirt you with it, right? And it would be like instantly, boom, I'm not sober for 20 hours, you know? And and it made so much sense to me. And you know, I don't have to worry about getting more booze because it doesn't matter if you drink when you're tripping. It just doesn't, you can't feel it. You're tripping, you know? And I didn't have to worry about any of that. I didn't have to worry about making friends or talking to people because I was just, I couldn't talk anyway. I was tripping too hard. And I didn't have to worry about eating or sleeping because you can't eat or sleep when you're on that stuff anyway. And it just solved every problem I had. And it created a couple new ones, but it was a solution. And so I was doing that like every day. And, you know, the way it works is if you do it every day, you have to do more every day, otherwise you can't feel it. So I was doing a lot. And after about 9 months of that, I woke up, and I think it was Mardi Gras, and I woke up in my dorm room, and we had a brick wall in our dorm, and I look over at the wall, and it's, you know, doing its thing, like when you're, if you never tripped before, just take my word for it, it's weird. So you like, so wall's moving, and I look to my roommate, and I'm like, dude, what, how long have I been out? And he goes, I don't know, 2 or 3 days, you know. And that was like normal, because I'd stay out for a few days and then pass out for a few days, you know. But what was weird was that I was still tripping, right? And it had been a few days, and I just never came down, you know what I mean? Just never. And what's kind of odd about that is that didn't stop me from doing more. It didn't stop me from drinking. It didn't stop me from it was just like a, well, that's weird, you know, and we're going to have to adjust, you know, the life plan around this. And, you know, and after sometimes if I were, I would get down about that and I would really feel insecure because, you know, I was seeing shit that wasn't there and most people weren't. And I felt like I had a disadvantage now. I was at a handicap. And, if I made a mistake or embarrassed myself, that would be my crutch to fall back on. You know, like, well, man, I'm nuts. I did too much acid. Sorry. You know, what do you want me to do? But I didn't stop anything. And so I failed out of school, you know, because couldn't go to class. And I moved into this girl's closet, and she had I don't know, she's like a raver girl, and I hung out mostly raver people at the time. It was like 1998, there's a lot of raves and stuff, and it was, I liked the music, and I liked, you know, we're all into the same stuff, but I didn't have the big pants or the purple hair or any of that, but I, you know, I tried to fit in. And so I'm living with this girl in her closet, and she takes in a cat, and I love cats, and, you know, so I'm like, sweet, we got a cat now. And and then I don't know how I'm going to pay rent for the closet. And so I took all the money I had, and I bought a bunch of dope. And I thought, well, you know, I can't hold a job. I can't I have no way to earn money. I tried being a street performer, and I'm like a really good at the devil sticks, if you've never seen. Don't worry about it if you don't know what they are. It's like being really good at the yo-yo, you know what I mean? So I, it's just a toy. But trust me, I'm the best you've ever seen at it. But I... you know, so I would go down to the French Quarter and I would do my thing and I'd get a crowd around me and people would be like, wow, that's so cool, what is that? But I was too burnt out, I couldn't talk and I couldn't convince them to put money in my hat. So I made about like a quarter an hour, you know, and so that wasn't going to work. So I thought, all right, I'll just sell dope, you know. And so now I'm cutting and bagging up this dope on the floor because we didn't have any furniture, but I had a mirror and I put the mirror on the floor and the cat would like, you know, get interested, and then play with its reflection on the mirror, and there's little baggies, cats love baggies and stuff, and in general, and so then, you know, before I know it, I put the mirror down on the ground, the cat comes running, you know what I mean, and then the cat starts, like, nodding out and puking, and, you know, it's like, great, now my cat's hooked on heroin, you know, and we couldn't think of a name for it, you know, because we were just too fried. I mean, we couldn't do anything, really. I could barely leave the place. And at that point, like, I guess outside circumstances-wise, that's the worst my life ever got, you know? I'm living in some girl's closet. I smell bad. I owned one towel, and it was disgusting. It could stand up on its own. And because when you're living that way, just getting wasted at any at any expense, as wasted as possible, getting quarters and then getting laundry detergent and then finding a laundromat and then taking your towel to the laundromat, I mean, it's just not going to happen. And, couldn't get a job. And I failed out of school, felt really bad about that because that cost my parents a bunch of money. And my parents paid the phone bill at that place so they could call and yell at me every day. And they just were freaking out. They didn't know what else to do. They're good people, but they didn't know what else to do with their crazy kid. And I didn't like that. That was a big depressing thing for me that, mom and dad are very disappointed. And they, I've driven them to insanity because they were going nuts. And so I'm waking up in the afternoon generally, and there's cat poop everywhere. And because when cats do dope, they poop all over the place. And mine did. I don't know. I've tested that with other cats. But so I'm doing, waking up, and the first thing that comes in my head at 3 in the afternoon when I come to in this closet would be like, is there any cat poop on me? And then I wouldn't get up right away because I was, it's depressing living like that, and I would just lie there. And after a while, I'd get up, but things on my mind would be like, what happened, man? You got into Tulane. That's hard to do, and you screwed that up. And, I used to have a little bit of hope, and, I used to have a couple friends, and not just people who would use each other, And even the girl I was living in her closet, we'd smile, we'd get along, but we just used each other for stuff, that was it. And, I can't even name this cat, and I was just down, and I was 19 years old, and I was thinking, it's never going to get better, it's not like he can stop, you know what I mean? And so, thank you. And so, I was pretty hopeless, and but if I found alcohol throughout the course of the day, that would change. And I often found alcohol in my crappy little apartment we were living in, because we had the kind of place where you could go and do whatever you want. The rave had closed down at 6 in the morning, and everyone would just kind of funnel into my place and just get crazy. And every now and then they'd pass out and they'd leave a bottle, right? So, 3-4 in the afternoon, I finally get out of the cat poop closet, and I'm walking, across the living room, and I find a bottle. And of course I drank it. Anyone would drink in that situation. And it would go down, and then it would take effect. And then the hope would come, and I would think, like, you know what? Maybe it's going to be all right. Okay, yeah, you're 19, your life sucks, but you're only 19, and your life sucks. You can turn this around. We could go to community college. We could we'd go get a job at the gas station. I bet you can do that even if you're a burnout, And I would get these, like, grand plans and ideas, like, I'm going to return my movies to Blockbuster. You know what I mean? And I had two movies. I had Starship Troopers and Chasing Amy, and I watched them both every day. And we had a milk crate and a little 13-inch TV VCR combo, and that was what I was into. So I at every level, understand both of those movies. And I had no need to keep them. It was time to return them, And so I would make these plans, like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to name that cat, I'm going to be a man. I'm going to get out there, and I'm going to sell that heroin, And just like, it's full of ambition with the booze because it gave me hope. And it also, and I don't know if it does that for normal people. I have no way to know. But I know it gave me so much hope that I had to drink more or the hope would go away. And even if, every time, because I had to drink more, the hope would go away. I would drink to a point to where I couldn't get any of that stuff done anyway. But it's better than having no hope. You know what I mean? I mean, why would I want to live that way? And I was stuck. And mom called one day, just like always, and it was a typically bad day for burnout Todd, and I couldn't really put a sentence together. And she said, I don't know what's wrong with you, but I bought you a plane ticket and you're coming home. And I said, okay, I didn't know what else to say. And I gave the junkie cat to this junkie guy who was living on an inflatable couch and just kind of rolled out on rent. And I got home, and I was hanging out with my brother. He was home, too, just for the weekend. And my brother's like a frat guy. And, he's successful and every way, business-wise, happy marriage, everything. Just a good dude. but, you know, heavy drinker too. And I'm drinking beers with my brother, and he says, so what happened? Why are you living with mom and dad? And I told him the truth. I was like, well, you know, it's just bad circumstance. I had a lot of trouble selling my heroin, and I couldn't make any money. And he's like a normal frat guy. He's never seen that stuff outside of a movie, maybe. And he's definitely never tried to pay his rent with it. And so he was like, you need to go to rehab. You know, it's just, you know, cause and effect, right? So next thing I know, I'm in an outpatient rehab. And my parents are taking me to these doctors again and trying to figure out what's wrong with me. And alcoholism was like one of the maybes. But I tell you, when I was new, it was just one of the things that might have been a problem, you know. Clearly, I needed to quit being a criminal and doing criminal stuff. Clearly, my mind had deteriorated because of all the drugs, and that was a problem. And then they tested me for all this stuff, and I had every mental disorder that you get, you know what I mean? And they said I wasn't a danger to myself or others, so I could stay at home, but they also said I was never going to move out of my parents' basement, and because I was just dumb, you know what I mean? Just wasn't going to happen. And, you know, they said maybe you have a problem with alcohol, too. And I was like, all right. So anyway, this rehab says you should go to AA and NA and check that out. So I'm like, all right, so do that. And I get to a few AA meetings, and I'm going to these meetings, sharing, because people listen, and saying some nonsense. I don't know what I'm saying, but I'm saying stuff. And then people, like, pat me on the back and be like, well, it's so great that you're here when you're so young, because I was 19 at the time, and everyone around me was pretty old. And then one day, one guy at the meeting picked me up, and he took me to a young people's group. And I was terrified. I mean, up until that point, I had never met or seen a group of people. I hadn't seen one other young person. And this was like 40 people that all looked my age. Some of the girls were good looking. And I was like terrified. It wasn't like a relief, like, oh, I found my people. It was like, oh, God, I have to impress these people. You know what I mean? Like, how am I going to get them to like me? I don't know. I'm a screw up. And I didn't have anything to talk to them about. I couldn't talk to any. The only thing I knew how to talk about was being a criminal, a couple of video games I was good at, or Starship Troopers Chasing Amy. And, I mean, that was it. So if you hadn't seen those two movies or weren't interested, and you didn't play Street Fighter II or Tekken, and you weren't currently selling drugs, I didn't, like, have anything to talk to you about, you know? But people in AA made it weird at first. I'm not going to lie. They would take – one guy grabbed my hand, and he took it, and he put it in some other guy's hand that I didn't know. He said, go make a friend, you know? And I'm like, this is so weird. And I'm like looking at the dude like, I'm sorry, man. This is weird, you know? And he's looking at me like, yeah, this is kind of weird, you know? And but that had to happen, I guess, because I was so awkward. And so – this guy, Mikey, was one of those dudes that happened with, and he was 16 at the time, and he had been sober a year. I thought that was weird. And he took me to a party at someone's house, an AA party. We were watching a movie at someone's house, and it was four dudes that lived there. They're all my age. They're all 19. They're all in college, and they're all sober, like over 2 years, I think, at the time. And we were watching some old movie, and all their girlfriends were over, and all their girlfriends were sober, and there's me and Mikey and a couple other dudes. And they're all like, I wanted them to like me so bad. Because I knew, at this point, I had talked to them enough to where I knew they drank like I did, they got wasted like I did, it you know, spared no expense to not be sober. And they needed it like I did, yet they were sober now. And I knew I needed to get in with them if I was going to have any kind of hope. And, you know, so we're watching a movie, and they're saying funny stuff about, like, cracking jokes at the movie. And they're, like, really funny. They're, like, witty. And they're not, like, goody-goody people. When I first saw young people's AA, the only thing I had to compare it to was, like, a youth group at a church, because I tried that a couple times when I was drinking, and which is cool if you're into that. But I like dirty jokes, and, you know, I don't know. It just didn't fit. And these people were not good. They were sober. And, you know, I could tell they were hooking up with each other. I could tell they you know, they were cynical, you know what I mean? And I was like, I can do this, you know what I mean? And so but I would say like a funny joke about the movie, and it would be awkward, and no one would laugh, you know? And but they would be like, yeah, it's cool, man, I'm glad you're here, you know? And I'm like, all right. So movie's over, and I go upstairs, lights are on. Now I'm really scared. You know what I mean? And now we're going to talk. And all the guys start talking about soccer. And I'd never liked sports until ever. I mean, I still don't. And I'm scared of the ball. You know what I mean? I can run pretty fast, right? But that's it. You know what I mean? Like if you pass the ball to me, I'm gonna drop it. And I know that. And I want you to like me, and that's gonna suck. And so they're talking about soccer, and I'm thinking, all right, well here we go. These guys play soccer. They're gonna want to play soccer one day, and they're gonna kick the ball to me, and I'm gonna screw it up, and they're gonna think I suck, and I can't stay sober. And so one of the girls there, this girl Ivy, she was my age. She's 19. I didn't know her from Adam. She just walks over to me and she says, hey, you got a cigarette? And I'm like, yeah. So we go outside and we smoke. And Ivy, I said, I didn't know how to talk to women, you know, except for what I learned in rehab. And so I said, what was your drug of choice? Because that's how you meet women in rehab. You know what I mean? And she laughed because she was sober 4 years. She hadn't been in rehab a long time. She hadn't heard that line in a long time. And so she goes, you must be in rehab. And then she said, she goes, I don't know my drug of choice. She goes, last time I got wasted, I OD'd on WD-40. I just squirted it right up my nose. And I was like, it's just like, what a woman, you know? And I'm like, wow. And I knew, you know, I was like, I knew. I'd never done WD-40, right? And I'm in AA today. I only go to AA. And, you know, but if you're willing to do that, you're willing to do anything to not be sober. You know, I get that. And and when you get sober as a teenager, WD-40, I guess, is a viable option. I did weird stuff, too. You know what I mean? And so I knew she was just like me, and she understood me. And we made friends. And there was nothing outside of I needed help there. I mean, she literally found, you know, she had a boyfriend, and she helped me get a sponsor, and she got me to go to the beach with everybody and meet a bunch of dudes. And I couldn't have done it without her. And I got a sponsor. I got this guy, Noah. He's still my sponsor today. I asked him because Ivy's friend, Shannon, was talking to him and brought me over to him and said, hey, have you met this new guy, Todd? And she goes, Todd, you should ask Noah to sponsor you. And I was like, that's weird. That's awkward. You know, like, what am I going to say, no? Like, I'm too good for you, Noah. I don't even know him. And and I was like, okay, will you sponsor me? And he took off his sunglasses and he said, yes. And he had this, like, really wicked Oakley's tan. And, like, just really redneck of him, you know, and I was thinking, oh, I screwed up, you know what I mean, I got the wrong guy, I'm kind of Oakley's tan, so I start talking to Noah, and I'm like, all right, I guess he's my sponsor, thank you, and he had never done a drug in his life, he never been to a rave, he was a businessman, I didn't like businessmen, I had nothing to say to a businessman, I mean, nothing, like, I don't even know what they have in their briefcases, I can't trust them, you know what I mean, they're just, like, I don't know anything about that world. And we started talking about people and fear, and he helped me understand what self... We say it's self-centered a lot in AA. That's kind of weird if you're not used to that, but he helped me understand what that means. And he invited me into his life, and I knew I could relate to him. And he uncovered real quick. He qualified with me. He was like, so... Because all I wanted to talk about was my drugs when I got sober. But he was like, well, did you drink? And I'm like... Well, yeah, so I had a few stories. I had a story where I drank a whole fifth of vodka and I couldn't put it down, and even though it was embarrassing me and my friends were trying to knock it out of my hand, but I couldn't because it felt so bad and it hurt me just to let it go. And he's like, yeah, that's pretty alcoholic, you know? And he said, you can fit in here. I'm like, okay. And he got me into service, and we got busy, and we worked at Steps. It took me years, you know, I was happy pretty quick. When I was real new, I was happy if I did some service. I was happy if I put away chairs. I was really happy if a pretty girl smiled at me. I was unhappy if I thought someone in AA didn't like me. I was unhappy if I thought I was in trouble, but that was about it. Then over time, it was like my relationship with my parents got valuable. And through taking inventory and talking to my sponsor, we started to uncover stuff. Like, so you got in a screaming match with your parents on the way to the meeting, got to the meeting, set up the chairs, told everyone you're doing great, stayed out till 4 in the morning till the diner, got home, woke them up, and then was late to work in the morning, but you think you're doing okay. And I'm like, well, all right. You know, so we started working on stuff. And I don't know, went back to college, and the only thing I'll say about that is I did it, and it was... couldn't have done it without AA. You know what I mean? And AA, I would say things like, I can't sit still. You don't understand. My sponsor would say, practice makes perfect. You can sit still. Just practice.
Okay.
And I'd say, I'm too dumb for school. The doctor said I'm too dumb for school. My IQ is way below 100 now because of all the drugs. Can't go to college. And he told me to take one class, and I got an A, and he was like, just celebrating that. I didn't think it was a big deal, but he's like, you got to go. You know. So went through school. That made my parents happy, I guess. You know what I mean? And that was the first thing. I was 6 years sober when I finished college. It was the first time I'd ever done something in the outside world that was somewhat of a success. Up until that point, I never kept a job. I had never, I was a crappy boyfriend. You know what I mean? I wasn't too good. Any car I had, I couldn't take care of. And because of AA and doing stuff in AA, you know, I figured out that there's stuff that I can do. And I don't know. I mean, life's really good now. I run a business. I didn't think I could ever do that. I have a car I like to drive because I make a car payment. And that alone is, like, insane compared to where I was when I was even 6 years sober. You know what I mean? I got two cats. They got names. They're like models of cat health. I mean, you cannot find a flea on them. And they're just really happy. And, get along with my folks. I don't feel like I have to impress them to win them over. We just get along. My side of the street's clean. It feels good, you know. And I live by principles, and they keep me safe, and they keep me happy. And it's everywhere in my life. It's at work. It's you know, it's with my girlfriend. It's with my home. It's just a way to live. Like yesterday, I had a resentment against my apartment complex because there's a flood and they broke something and they didn't want to fix it. And I was sitting on my porch smoking a cigarette and I could feel hate coming out of my chest in the direction of the leasing office, you know? I hated them so much and so mad. And I went to them and I said, hey, there's a flood. You guys, you know, some of my stuff's broken. And they said, well, prove our negligence and we'll fix it. Take us to court. And I was like, oh, I hate you so much right now. And, that lasted about a day and a half. And I talked to my sponsor about it on the way here, and it's gone. I don't really hate them anymore. And I can't afford that kind of hate. And so stuff like that is like a major perk in AA. I don't have to hold resentments or beef, you know what I mean, and waste time fighting stuff, you know. And it's nice, you know, it's nice. It's not perfect, but it's really nice. So if you're new, I hope you're having fun in AA so far. If you're not, there's a way to do it. And everybody was new once. I was new. I promise you, I was terribly uncomfortable when I was new. And I promise you, I feel totally at ease right now. And it doesn't take that much time. You know what I mean? So that's all I got. But thanks for letting me share.